What if I told you that a multi-million dollar industrial park could cause female employment in a developing region to jump by like 14 percentage points?
I mean, that's a massive shift. It would trigger this measurable cascade in household empowerment, right?
Exactly. And it would fundamentally rewrite local gender norms.
But here's the catch. If you ran a standard two-way fixed effects model on the aggregate population data,
your output would suggest the policy was a complete failure.
Yeah, a total zero. And that scenario is really the defining reality of modern empirical research.
Because when you step out of the, you know, the sterile environment of an RCT and into evaluating staggered place-based policies, averages just mask everything.
They do. The standard tools, if you just apply them blindly without diagnostic rigor, they will actively mislead you.
So welcome to today's deep dive. If you're a graduate student in economics or, you know, a rigorous empirical researcher, you already know identifying clean causal effects in observational data is tough.
It is incredibly intricate, yeah.
Our mission today is to give you a comprehensive study guide for evaluating place-based policies. We're going to tear down and rebuild a staggered difference in differences design using Ethiopia's industrial parks as our test case.
Right. And we're working through a tutorial data set that's calibrated to replicate the 2026 findings of Huang, Wang, and Xu.
Which is such a beautifully constructed data set, honestly.
It really is. The data architecture is super instructive for you guys. It merges a satellite district year panel covering 139 districts, or WARDAs, from 2005 to 2020.
And within that panel, we've got 17 treated districts and 122 never treated controls, right?
Correct. And those controls were selected via propensity score matching to guarantee common support on the baseline characteristics.
And then later on, we integrate repeated cross-sections from the demographic and health surveys. That's for measuring the actual household welfare.
Exactly. So just to outline the blueprint for you, we are moving sequentially.
We start by defining our estimand, which is the average treatment effect on the treated, or ATT.
Then we run a naive, static, two-way fixed effects model. We'll diagnose the dreaded negative weights problem using a Goodman-Bacon decomposition.
Oh, we definitely have to talk about negative weights.
Oh, absolutely. And then we'll resolve those biases with modern, staggered, robust estimators.
After that, we'll implement a repeated cross-section design to handle the microdata. And finally, we'll harden the inference with Conley spatial standard errors.
So let's jump into the foundational hurdle here, which is treatment timing. The Ethiopian government didn't just turn on all the parks at once.
Right. It wasn't a single switch. One park opened in 2008, and the rest rolled out between 2014 and 2020.
Yeah, a classic staggered rollout.
So to conceptualize staggered dead for you, imagine a city installing streetlights block by block over, say, a 12-year period.
That's a great analogy.
Thanks. So if you want to estimate the causal effect of that lighting on nighttime crime, you can't just pool the data into one big pre-lighting and post-lighting bucket.
No, because there's no universal intervention date.
Exactly. To do it right, you have to align each individual block to its own specific installation year.
Which in the literature we call event time.
Right, event time. And then you compare its subsequent trajectory to a control block that hasn't received lighting yet.
And that alignment lets us build a series of overlapping two-by-two comparisons. But the internal validity of every single one of those comparisons relies entirely on parallel trends.
The famous identifying assumption.
Yeah, you can't escape it. Because we can't observe the counterfactual, we have to assume that without the park, the treated and control districts would have evolved on the exact same trajectory.
And just to clarify, their baseline levels can differ, right?
Oh, definitely. The fixed effects will absorb those baseline differences, but their dynamic slopes, the trajectories, those must match.
So let's look at what happens if we just ignore the staggering entirely and try a naive approach.
Which you should never do, but let's see what happens.
Right, just as a baseline. If we collapse our data set around the median park opening year, which is 2017, and just run a simple two-by-two comparison.
Just forming four-cell means for treated versus control by pre versus post.
Exactly. The model spits out an increase of roughly 20 log points in inverse hyperbolic sine nighttime light.
And we should definitely pause here to clarify the dependent variable. We're using the inverse hyperbolic sine, or IHS, of the raw nighttime light pixel values.
Right, because for anyone writing this code, you know, IHS acts basically like a natural log transformation.
It does. So you can interpret the coefficient as an approximate percentage change, but critically, it's defined at zero.
Which is essential when you're using satellite data.
Yeah, because a lot of these rural districts emit literally zero detectable baseline light. A standard log would just drop those observations.
So, okay, we get this roughly 20% increase in light from the naive model, and it's statistically significant at the 5% level.
But if you look at the mechanics, that naive estimate is actually understating the true ATT.
Why is that?
Because the treatment effect is dynamic, it's not constant. Building an industrial park takes years, it's a massive physical process.
Right, it's not just boom, factories are running.
Exactly. The event study shows the effect scales gradually over 5 years. So when you force a median year collapse, you're mathematically averaging the early concrete pouring phase.
Where the effects are basically zero.
Right, you're averaging that zero with the later full capacity production phase. And that aggregation inherently drags your mean estimate way down.
Which means we need a more formal, high-dimensional approach. Which brings us to the static two-way fixed effects specification.
The classic TWFE. So to implement this, you specify your outcome as a function of the treatment indicator.
And then you add your fixed effects. First, a district fixed effect to absorb time invariant local stuff.
Like if a treated city just naturally has brighter baseline infrastructure, that gets absorbed.
And then critically, you add a region by year fixed effect.
Yes. That parameter is crucial because it absorbs regional macro shocks. Say there's a localized drought, or maybe a new highway hits a specific region in 2015.
The region by year FE scrubs all of that out uniformly. So when we run that TWFE, the coefficient jumps to a 27 log point increase.
But wait, we have a confounding variable in the mix here.
Right, because the treated districts in this sample were historically more urbanized, you know, they were already trending upward faster than the controls before the parks were even built.
Exactly. So we have to update the model by adding linear trend interactions. This allows each district to follow its own baseline trajectory,
And when you do that, the coefficient drops to roughly 21.5 log points.
which is textbook confounding. The trend interaction isolates the clean Poiseuille effect by basically stripping out that pre-existing momentum.
So 21.5 log points is our cleaner metric. But even with that, relying on TWFE under staggered timing brings up a huge methodological vulnerability.
Oh, the dreaded forbidden comparison.
Yeah, we really need to interrogate the math here because in a staggered rollout, TWFE quietly uses units that are already treated as control groups for newly treated units.
Which is incredibly problematic.
It's like evaluating a new weight loss protocol, right?
Right.
Imagine you use a patient who's already been on the diet for 3 years and is still losing weight as the control reference for a brand new patient.
The comparison just totally breaks down because your reference group is actively shrinking.
Exactly. So the new patient's relative weight loss looks artificially small or even negative.
And that right there is the exact mechanism of attenuation bias caused by negative weights. If your early treated districts have effects that grow over time, using them as controls subtracts that growing effect from your estimate.
It's a nightmare for researchers. So how do we diagnose this in our data set?
We use the Goodman-Bacon decomposition. This theorem takes that single TWFE coefficient and breaks it down into a weighted average of all the constituent 2x2 DIDI comparisons.
And when we look at the Bacon diagnostic output for our data, it gives us a really clear picture. It shows that 95.4% of the estimator's weight is placed on clean, treated versus never treated comparisons.
Right. And those problematic later versus earlier comparisons, they carry a mere 1.2% of the total weight.
So the lesson here for you applied researchers is really important. Negative weights are a fatal theoretical flaw, sure, but their empirical impact depends entirely on your control pool size.
Absolutely. We matched 122 never treated controls against only 17 treated units. So mathematically, the clean comparisons just overwhelm the forbidden ones.
Which means TWFE is actually functionally unbiased in this specific context.
It is, yeah. But regardless of what the Bacon diagnostic says, modern peer review demands that we validate this with staggered robust estimators.
Oh, for sure. Reviewers will absolutely ask for it. So we cross-examine the data using tools that structurally prohibit forbidden comparisons.
Specifically, we use Callaway and Santa Ana, Sun and Abraham, and the Borsiak, Jaravel, and Spies imputation method.
And for those writing the code, these estimators essentially isolate specific treatment cohorts and compare them exclusively to clean, never treated, or not yet treated controls.
Right. And then they aggregate those group time average treatment effects ex post.
And the beautiful thing is, when we apply them to our data, the outputs all cluster in this incredibly tight 5 log point spread.
Yeah, ranging from 25.6 to 30.2 log points. That consistency across completely different methodologies gives us massive robustness insurance.
It's a great feeling when that happens. So using the Sun-Abraham framework, we can also extract the dynamic event study coefficients to see the trajectory over event time.
And when you plot that, the pretreatment leads, the years before the park opens, they just hug the zero line. They're statistically indistinguishable from zero.
Which is our best empirical defense of the parallel trends assumption.
Exactly. It also confirms there were no anticipation effects. Local economies weren't shifting behavior before the parks officially opened.
But then, post-intervention, the lags show this steady cumulative climb. At event year zero, it's a small 11.5 log points.
But by year two, it hits 22 log points, and then it plateaus at roughly 48 log points around year four.
Which perfectly aligns with the physical reality of building supply chains and hitting factory capacity. It's a four-year maturation curve.
So we've proved local economic activity increases, but we have to talk about SETDA.
Yes, the stable unit treatment value assumption. Because place-based policies are incredibly vulnerable to SUTVA violations.
They are. What if the park isn't creating new growth, but just, stealing capital and labor from the neighboring district?
Right. If it's just spatial displacement, then the treatment effect is just a statistical illusion caused by hollowing out your control group.
Exactly. So to test SUTVA, we tweak the spatial parameters. We run a spillover analysis focusing purely on control districts within a 10-kilometer radius of an operational park.
The logic being, if the park displaces local activity, the coefficient on those neighbors should go negative.
And if it creates positive agglomeration spillovers, it should go positive.
But when we run the specification, the coefficient for that 10-kilometer buffer zone is like plus 0.0648, which is totally insignificant.
While the host district itself maintains its massive growth.
So what that tells us is these parks are operating as relatively self-contained enclave economies.
Right, the growth is net new. It's not cannibalized from the neighbors. SUTVA holds.
Which is great news. But, just seeing more nighttime light doesn't actually mean human welfare improved.
No, it just means there's more electricity running. To see the micro-level impact, we have to pivot our analysis to the demographic and health surveys data.
The DHS data. And this introduces a really tricky data structure problem.
Because the DHS isn't a panel, it's a repeated cross-section, or RCS.
Right. The survey teams interview entirely new, randomly sampled households in every single wave.
So we don't have a household panel key. We literally cannot use household-level fixed effects to track individual people over time.
So how do you implement a DAD design on a repeated cross-section?
You have to identify the effect off group means instead of individual changes.
Okay, so the estimating equation uses district fixed effects to capture the static local culture and geography.
And then region-by-round fixed effects to absorb any macro shocks happening at the specific time of that survey round.
Plus, you absolutely have to integrate the DHS survey probability weights.
Yes, to correct for their complex sampling design. You can't skip the weights.
So when we run this, the welfare metrics look great. Durable goods ownership is up about 23% of a standard deviation.
Housing quality, meaning electricity, piped water, finished floors that jumps nearly 25 percentage points.
And overall, household wealth increases by 0.383 standard deviations. It's robust across the board.
It is. But this is where we hit the most critical analytical juncture of the whole deep dive.
Right, because if you just stop there and look at the aggregate employment numbers, you're going to think the policy failed.
Because the coefficient for average non-agricultural employment yields a statistically insignificant plus 0.091.
It's the danger of averages. It's like saying a room is perfectly comfortable when, half the room is freezing and the other half is literally on fire.
That is exactly what's happening in the data. An insignificant average doesn't mean nothing happened. It usually means two subpopulations are reacting differently.
So you have to apply a theory-driven split. And since Ethiopian industrial parks are heavily garment and textile focused,
we stratify the sample by sex, and when we rerun the specification just for female respondents.
Boom. A massive, statistically significant 14 percentage point increase in non-agricultural employment.
Exactly. While the male employment coefficient just sits there at a totally insignificant plus 0.017.
Because the men in these districts had largely already transitioned off farm, the factories brought female labor into the formal wage economy for the very first time.
And that formal wage access acts as a catalyst. The data tracks this incredible empowerment cascade.
Oh, the downstream effects are wild. Female ownership of distinct savings accounts jumps by over 31 percentage points.
Self-reported participation in major household decisions goes up, and this is the biggest one. acceptance of domestic violence within those households drops by 21 percentage points.
It's incredible. And methodologically, the takeaway for you guys listening is, if you don't test for distributional heterogeneity, you might publish a null finding on a policy that actually worked brilliantly.
You really have to look beneath the aggregate estimand.
Okay, so we've established the effects. But any decent peer reviewer is going to look at this and immediately attack our standard errors.
Naturally. Because the biggest threat to our standard errors here is physical geography.
Right. The 17 treated words aren't just randomly sprinkled across a map. They're heavily clustered along major highways and near big urban centers.
And standard OLS assumes error terms are independent and identically distributed. But when units are physically clustered, that assumption is dead on arrival.
Because if there's a supply chain hiccup or a weather event, it hits all those clustered districts at the exact same time.
The idiosyncratic shocks are correlated. If you use naive standard errors, you're going to underestimate the variance.
You'll artificially shrink your confidence intervals, inflate your t-stats, and end up with false discoveries.
So we have to harden the inference. We implement Conley spatial HAC standard errors.
And for those unfamiliar, this adjusts the covariance matrix in two directions. First, the HAC component, heteroscedasticity and autocorrelation consistent.
Right, which lets a district's error term correlate with its own past errors over time, fixing the serial correlation.
And then second, the spatial component. This uses a distance threshold. It lets the error term of one district correlate with nearby districts in the same year.
It applies a Bartlett kernel, so the assumed correlation decays as the physical distance between the districts increases up to a cutoff point.
So when we run the Conley standard errors, what happens to our primary nighttime light estimate?
Well, the standard error blows up by a factor of 2.4 compared to the naive version. The variance more than doubles, going from 0.0329 to 0.0799.
But the beautiful part, that 21.5 log point ATT remains statistically significant at the 1% level.
The signal is just that strong. It punches right through the spatial noise.
And it even survives structural robustness checks. Like, if we completely drop the capital region of Addis Ababa to make sure the capital isn't driving the effect, it still holds.
And if we restrict the control pool just to remote rural districts more than 50 kilometers from any city, the causal estimate barely moves.
So, synthesizing everything we've done today on this deep dive, we built a rigorous framework for evaluating place-based policies.
We started by identifying the bias in naive averages and static fixed effects under staggered rollouts.
We proved TWFE was safe here using the Bacon decomposition, but still verified it with Callaway San Ana and Sun Abraham estimators.
We traced the dynamic S-curve, validated SUTVA with spatial spillovers, handled repeated cross-sections without panel keys, and found that crucial gender split.
All before locking it down with Conley spatial standard errors.
And honestly, the economic implications are super specific here. Place-based policies desperately need existing infrastructure.
Yeah, the data shows the effect fades by like minus 0.0335 per kilometer you move away from a city. And it gets amplified by plus 0.6695 if you're near a paved road.
Parks don't just magically create economic ecosystems out of nothing. They need capital structures to leverage.
And when they do work, particularly in labor-intensive manufacturing, they are massive engines for integrating women into formal labor and changing household bargaining power.
It's a textbook example of targeted impact.
So as you go back to your own empirical research, we want to leave you with a methodological challenge to chew on. We relied heavily on flat pre-trends to defend parallel trends.
Right, the classic defense.
But what if there's an unobserved compounding confounder skewing the post-treatment path? Think about how you'd implement a Ramachan-Roth sensitivity analysis on this data.
Exactly how large of a theoretical pre-trend violation would it mathematically take to force that 21.5 log point effect across zero?
That's a great thought experiment. And furthermore, how would you specify a model to test the actual mechanisms of that empowerment cascade?
Like, is the shift in household power strictly because of the female wage income? Or is it the sociological effect of women gathering in centralized formal workplaces?
How do you untangle the money from the culture in the data? Because causal inference in observational data is never an absolute certainty.
Never. It's just an exercise in systematically bounding your uncertainty.
You have to build the empirical tools to isolate the signal from the noise.